Here we come, walking down the street. We get the funniest looks from everyone we meet.
We're here with the monkeys, and people say we're monkeying around. But we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
We go where we want to, do what we like to do. The only time to get restless, there's always something new.
And that's right, we are the Monkees. You're listening to Scared Monkees Radio here at www.scaredmonkees.com/radio. You can pick us up live, or you can hear the podcast of any show or my daily commentary. We're also on Channel 46 on Trust Cable in Alabama, on satellite virtual channel W3957 in beautiful DigiCypher 2 audio. And, of course, wherever else you can pick us up. Welcome. Tonight, Jackie Hollander will be here to update her case. Her case was that she alleges she was raped by James Brown. She took her case all the way to the Supreme Court. And, well, there was a disappointing result in that. However, there is some good news, and it has to do with the statute of limitations when a sexual assault victim is intimidated. So we're going to talk to her about that. Also, it's been 2 years since the disappearance of Alabama teen Natalie Holloway in Aruba. Tonight, Jossie Mansour from Aruba will talk about that. And then a little later on, Dave Holloway and Robin Holloway will be here to talk about how the family is coping. And then Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch will be here to update us on how the Hogs and Horses event went here a couple of weeks ago, and much, much more. Here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkees Radio, we'll be right back.
Okay. Lived a good job in the city, working for the man every night and day, and I never lost 1 minute of sleep, worrying about the way things might have been. Big wheel keep on turning.
Okay, we're back. Jackie Hollander has been a guest on my program in the past. We talked about her case, a lawsuit against the late singer James Brown, went all the way to the Supreme Court and came back with a disappointing result, some would say. However, there is some good news that has come out of all of this. Jackie, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Dana.
How are you?
Fine. It's good to be here.
We could rehash the whole case, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about that, but there is some good news that has come out of this. Last time you were on the program, there was some law that was going to be considered, and that's been done. Tell us about what's been going on.
Well, it's the bill is actually HB 1462, and it just passed through the Senate in the state of Illinois.
Great.
And it's the Equitable Estoppel Bill. And I live in a wonderful state. I had a wonderful group of women from the Illinois Coalition Against Sexual Violence supporting this bill. And I watched it go through the House. Then I watched it go through the Senate. And it got voted through last week. And now it's going back to the House for a signature and on to the governor.
Fantastic. And just to fill the people in a little bit, this bill talks about the statute of limitations, or stopping the statute of limitations when a sexual assault victim has been intimidated by the alleged perpetrator, correct?
It's from my case that I took to the Supreme Court. It will protect victims when their cases are similar to mine. when their attacker, you know, uses intimidation, uses fear, which is what most rapists do.
Right.
So this will give them the chance to get the help, you know what I'm saying, and the statute will be told for them.
Let's talk about the intimidation factor, Jackie. A lot of people, legislators included, law enforcement, judges, lawyers, medical professionals, don't understand that intimidation factor. It's that old saying that, why did you wait so long to report? How can we believe you now after all this time? Let's talk about that, because there's a lot that isn't understood.
You know, I think the best way, of course, I made a lot of mistakes in the things that I did, Dana. I'm not going to sit here and say that I, by any means, was... I don't think there's anything as a rape victim that you can categorize that knows what to do.
Right.
There's not a step A to a step Z to follow when you get raped. There's supposed to be. You're supposed to, you know, go to the hospitals and of course, your local law enforcement officers. I was in a situation where after he put the shotgun to my face and after he did to me what he did to me, and I fought so hard to survive, there was no doubt in my mind that this man would have had me killed. There was no doubt in my mind that he had the power to have me killed. So when they start threatening you and they start getting control of you, and I fully believe that my mind shattered. My mind could not comprehend what was happening to me at that moment. I wanted to die. It was so much easier for me at one second of the event that I actually wanted him to go ahead and kill me, because it would have been easier for me. And so I think this is this is when your mind shatters, that the victims become unable to act in a rational manner after the event. You no longer, everybody becomes suspect to you.
Mm-hmm.
In my case, that's what it was, because I had to face the world. I wasn't facing just a local police department. I wasn't facing a small town. Do you understand what I'm saying? I was
exactly.
Facing the whole wide world when I stepped out.
James Brown being an international music figure at the time, and yourself, the intimidation factor, besides the physical violence that no one would believe you.
Oh, it didn't go away. It went on for years, the intimidation, the threats, the accidents that could not be proven. You know, I had to hire a security team. Thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars went into security to be around me. I was very blessed. You know, I had the Navy SEALs in and around my life. And that's who I used as my security detail.
When you talk about you're so lucky to live in the state of Illinois, it makes me wonder how other states cannot look at passing legislation like this. Rape and sexual assault, education has obviously improved over the years, but it still isn't where it should be. And the legislators need to do more to help protect the victim. It's the old story, really, who is the victim and who takes the blame in these types of situations. Let's talk about your work with the state of Illinois and what you would like to see with other states.
Well, when I went in front of the House, I must say, the House of Representatives, and when I walked into that Capitol and stood there and saw the Senate committee members, I must say it was the proudest day of my life, Dana. It was the proudest day of my life, because I never thought that I would live to ever see the passing of Mr. Brown. I, thought that I would probably die first. And then I walked into that Capitol, and senators were coming up to me, and they were shaking my hand. And I looked around me, and I saw the flag, and I really broke down in tears because I was so proud that I had made it so far. And to see this law go through is without a doubt the biggest win that I could have ever gotten. The Supreme Court was really not that was not a win. That was a step for other women, not for me. It was never about money. It was about the laws being changed. And when I got to the Capitol, I knew I was home. I knew that I could rest, and I knew that my wonderful state was going to wrap its arms around other victims like me and say, you're safe and you're warm now. And I just believe this is the first time ever in the United States that a bill like this has ever been passed. And once the governor signs it, I can look around and I think the other states will follow. And I think for the first time in the United States that all of a sudden rape victims will have arms wrapped around them and they'll be safe. They'll be safe and they'll be warm. And that's what this has all been about. And couldn't have done it without people like you and Larry Garrison and all you wonderful people. All you wonderful people. They were there at the Capitol. And they were rooting us on. And it made me real proud. I had a wonderful senator, Maddie. And she took that bill on forward in front of the Senate. And it was a very proud day for me.
Well, you've got a lot of class, lady, I'll tell you. You made a comment that in the press, it says, we made a difference, and that's worth a lot more than the lawsuit, you said. Now, there's some long-term effects from your trauma. You were diagnosed in 2000 with Graves' disease. Let's talk about Graves' disease a bit. A lot of people won't know what that is.
Graves' disease is a thyroid disease, and it came from living in fear. President Bush had it, his wife, during the Iraq War when it first broke out. Graves, Bobby Labonte, the race car driver, has it. It's usually from stress. Mm-hmm. It's like the adrenaline gland keeps going real fast and shooting adrenaline into the thyroid. And if you live in fear, it's like a rabbit. Your thyroid doesn't know when to quit off. And then it gets into your immune system, and it affects you, and it's hurt me real bad. It's affected my heart, my legs, and I have one right droopy eye now. Thank God my eyes don't bulge. I'm very blessed for that because it can do that.
Right.
But I've been blessed. My eyes, I always had big blue eyes anyway, so they're still the same, and I just have a hard time with it. There are days I get up where I feel like I can't walk. And you suffer real bad with Graves. But that's just a very small thing in my life. That's just what happened from the rape. And out of all of this, I think I'm a very blessed human being. I lived, and they said that the odds were I wasn't going to live, and I did survive, and I've been blessed with a lot of friends and wonderful family and people around me. And hey, I mean, 2 weeks ago I was standing in the capital of Illinois looking around going, what does a girl like me deserve to be here for?
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm just a I may have sued a national celebrity, but I'm just a girl. I'm no different than any other girl out there in the United States. I'm just a girl that went up against an icon.
Jackie, what can we in the media do, both the radio, print, television, to educate the people out there about sexual assault, long-term effects, intimidation, etc.? Because honestly, you just don't hear a lot about this.
You know, they don't. It's. I've been real shocked at, you guys have been wonderful. I've been real shocked at, like, TMZ and all these others. you know, they've stepped aside from all of this. You know, the Nancy Grace show. You wonder why aren't they pulling this case out? Is it because if it's James Brown, nobody wants to talk about bad about James Brown or what the problem is here? But because I watch Larry King live and I see his wife on there, you know, or the woman that claimed to be his wife on there talking about what a great God he is, and I see all these different shows doing that. No, where it needs to start is people like TMZ and all these different stations need to be, you know, letting the truth come out here. And that's what's important is media that is not afraid to say, you know, this is the truth and let's get it out there. But rape victims, for some reason, and I don't think it's just me with James Brown, I think we automatically have a black mark on our face, and people look at us and go, oh my God, if she said that about him, she may say that about me.
Right.
Well, that's not necessarily true. You know what I'm saying, Dana?
Yes.
It's rape victims are still tarnished these days. It's not changed that much from the olden days.
The initial contact, the first time that the victim gets the courage to come forward and make her report, and she comes across that grizzled old police officer,
right,
who's sitting there looking at her from across the desk.
Been in front of him.
Yep.
Been in front of him.
And you have to wonder why law enforcement, let me rephrase that, doesn't step forward and have some people trained, the female officers, more compassionate male officers, to know how to deal with the rape victim, not just to look at them and try to brush it off, for lack of a better term. Your comments.
Well, you know, I can talk about this now because my court case is over, whereas when I talked to you before, I couldn't talk.
Right.
I had the real pleasure, I don't know if you call this pleasure or not, because I sure wouldn't want to do it again, but when I got raped, Richard Radcliffe, the well-known polygrapher from the FBI, was brought in, and he did my polygraph test, and, you know, the man walks in, he's the most intimidating human being you could ever meet in your life. He did the Richard Jewell case.
Right.
For the Olympic, Centennial Olympic bombing. And, I mean, the man walks in, and his equipment's not the norm. It's, like, high up there. You know, once it gets out of the bureau, it gets into the, you know, all that computerized stuff. And, I mean, you can't beat these systems, you know what I'm saying? And this man put me through hours of the ringer. Besides the polygraph test, he put me through the questioning and all that, and it was all videotaped, and I was in bed for 2 weeks after it. And, you know, and then again, the tabloids, they put me through the polygraphs, and I mean, I've been polygraphed to the point where how many more can you give a human being? And even with the law enforcement officers, when you sit in front of them and you tell them, they stare at you. You know what I'm saying? It's rough. It's a very rough situation to be a victim and to have to fight your way for the truth. And that's basically what I've had to do for 19 years, is to fight for the truth. And nobody should have to do that.
No.
I mean, nobody should have to fight for the truth. James Brown had every opportunity in the world, every opportunity there, where if this man who told the world that he was innocent, hey, all this man had to do was come into the court. He didn't have to fight the 2-year statute.
Right.
He could have walked in that courtroom and we could have sat down for business.
Exactly. They say that in our system of laws that you're innocent until proven guilty, but with the victims, it seems like you're guilty until proven innocent, and that's a huge problem. What's next for Jackie Hollander? Because you've done so much for others, we have to hear a little bit about what's next for you.
Well, I never really wanted a big bonfire out of my life, so I'm pretty blessed. I get up in the morning and I see the sun rise, and I think what's next for me is I looked around the other day and I'm still having a hard time believing that James Brown is really dead and that I'm free.
Right.
You know, I'm having a hard time still not looking over my shoulder. I'm having a hard time realizing that I'm finally free, and hopefully, maybe, I don't know, one day I may sit down and write a book or sell the master or do something therapeutic in my life. I don't know if I really will do a book or not. I'm just like, everything's up in the air with me. It's I'm too busy realizing I'm finally free. It's a very strange feeling.
Well, like the old gospel song, Jackie, one day at a time, and I'm sure you'll be fine. And congratulations on the bill passing.
Well, Dana, I thank you so much, and your great radio show, and all the beautiful people that listen to you, and you know, and have supported us. I thank them, and gosh, if there are any rape victims out there right now at this moment that are afraid, I've said this on your show before, but please pick up the phone. Please call Dana, and if you need me, I'm right there beside you. If it's long distance, I don't care if you're in Canada, Australia, New Zealand, wherever you are. If you're a rape victim and you're afraid, you call Dana, and I'll be there for you, and we'll get this thing straight and get your life back going good, and maybe you can change a lot, too.
Thanks, Jackie.
Thank you, Dana.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
Mustang Sally, guess you better slow up than Mustang down. Mustang Sally, my baby, guess you better slow up than Mustang.
All right, we're back. It's been 2 years since Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway disappeared on the island of Aruba. We've all seen the news coverage. We've all seen the incompetence of the Aruban authorities to try and solve this case. Now the two-year limit is up, and the cable news networks, to say the least, are confused when it comes to what is happening now that 2 years is here. I thought I'd bring in the managing editor of Dario, Jossie Mansour, to the program to talk just about that. Hi, Jossie.
Hi. How are you, Dana?
Nice. I'm good. Nice to have you here with me. 2 years, did you ever think it would be this long?
No, never. I thought, seeing the case, seeing what happened, the facts involved in the beginning, I thought it was a relatively simple case to solve. But it has been dragging on and on and on. And there's no end to it in sight.
The cable news networks, to say the least, are confused, and we hear different report after different report around the two-year limit. Can you explain what's happening now that 2 years is here?
Look, the two-year limit is applied to people being suspects in a case such as this. And that, even that, isn't a fast date. That can always be extended for a longer period of time or for a time unlimited. The incident itself, the case itself, has no limits. There are no limits in the law for anything of that sort. In other words, indicating or pointing towards rape, sexual assault, or murder. There is no time limit involved in that.
The suspects, Joran van der Sloot and the Kelpo brothers, are still suspects as we speak. What is the status of that? Will their status as being suspects be extended?
I think it already has been extended. We received at least a communique from the what we call the Open Bar Ministry. That's the Ministry of Justice, where the prosecutors are, their office. They put out a bulletin to us, a press release, that says that it has been extended, that the two-year limit with regards to these three suspects is no longer limited to 2 years.
Do you know how long it is limited to?
No, they didn't put a specified time on it now.
Okay, that is one of the confusing things, again, that the cable news network seemed to misreport. Now, we all know, Jossie, that the Dutch authorities have done a search at the Vandersloot residence. They've been over to the Kelpo's. Whether they were testing cell phones or what, we don't know. Have we heard any more about that?
No, we the only things that we know are those two facts that you just mentioned. One, that they were at the Vandersloot's property, checking out anything that could indicate the presence of Natalie at that premise, that area. And two, they paid the visits to the residence of the Kalpo brothers, Deepak and Satish. They went inside. They tested, they made themselves familiar with the layout of the house. They wanted to know from which room cellular calls were made that night, that early morning. And also messages, email messages were sent. That's the only two things they've done so far that anyone in Aruba is aware of.
Has there been any other searches done, Jossie, or what's the status of the Dutch authorities' investigation?
You know, we haven't heard anything from them anymore. They went back to their offices or hotels or wherever they're staying, mm-hmm. and they haven't been in action in the public eye again since the visit to the Kalpo brothers' residence. We haven't heard anything more about. We know they're still in Aruba, but we don't know what they're up to, what they're studying, or how they're going to proceed next. It's anyone's guess.
There was some discussion about the fishermen's huts, more searches at the sand dunes. Again, that's still all up in the air?
That's all up in the air. I think they should visit the fishermen's hut because it is a point of interest. It is one area that appears over and over again in the declarations of these three suspects to the police. And let me tell you that besides these three suspects, there are no other suspects in sight, okay? It has been limited, the whole case has been limited and investigated in relation to these three guys with whom Natalie was seen last.
Joran has written a book that's been released from what I've read and from what I've seen about it. It all looks like a bunch of hot air to me. Your comments on that?
You know, I haven't read the book. I'm not going to read it either. I'm not going to spend money on lies and lies and lies that I've read over and over again in all the interrogations that took place here. The only thing that I've been following is comments on it by other people that have read the book. I've checked here with the bookstores that sell this kind of book.
Right.
It's been lying on the shelves. Nobody seems to be interested in it except one or another Dutch citizens from Holland. But the Arubans themselves haven't shown any interest in buying the book.
Press coverage, besides your fine paper at the REO, has there been any other press coverage? We know of some Dutch TV shows and some other things now that the two-year anniversary is here.
Yeah, there have been, but not from Holland itself. We do have a Dutch paper that circulates in Aruba called the Amigo. It's printed in Curaçao. The section in Aruba is printed here, and another paper called Bon Dia Aruba. They've been covering this case also, not as profoundly as the Diario has, but they have been covering the case and printing one or another article with regards to it.
Tim Miller from Texas Equisearch was on my program last week, Jossie, and says that he's coming back to Aruba in June to do another deep water search. You and I both know that he ran into a lot of red tape, so to speak, from the authorities. Have you heard anything about Tim coming back, and will he have a little bit more open access to search where he wants to search?
I've heard that he is coming back, and I've heard that he is going, in fact, to search again on the water, right across the Marriott Hotel to the west, which is where they should be searching now, as far as we are concerned, and we've been following this case from the beginning. We still believe very firmly that if she is to be found anywhere, she will be found in the ocean. I mean, we haven't seen anything to change our minds on that. But I hope Tim comes back. I'm sure he will be given all the leeway that is necessary for him to do the searches that he wants to do. Because everyone in Aruba, every conscious citizen here, wants this case to be resolved.
The government. Has there been any change from the Aruban government as far as, A, their status in the world community as far as Aruba being a safe island to travel to, and, B, their desire to get this case solved and to get on with life?
You know, as for the government itself, I don't know, because I haven't seen any interest shown by them in any time period whatsoever in the past 2 years. I know for a fact, though, that the Minister of Justice, Rudy Cruz, was the one that requested the assistance of Holland in order for this Dutch team to be able to come to Aruba from the Forensic Institute in Holland. In other words, this is a petition by one representative of the Aruban government, but I think that he did it so that they can close the case, no? So that either they get answers or they will not work on this case anymore.
The Aruban Police Department, we've heard of in the past, had a lot of strife. There were questions about pay and overtime. We haven't heard much about them lately. What's the status of the Aruban Police Department?
The police department in Aruba is interested in this case. They have been working on it on and off, and whenever they have the time necessary to do so, in all their fights and persecutions by their boss, again, the same Minister of Justice. Remember that in the beginning, when this case broke, there was a lot of disgust in the police corps because they took away their overtime pay, they took away their bonuses, they took away I don't know what other kinds.
Right.
So their hearts were not in it at that time. They could have done this much better had they had the relaxation necessary to do their work, the way we've seen them do it over 34 years of my being in the newspaper business in Aruba. I think we have a good police corps here, an excellent one. But in this case, something went wrong from the beginning. I don't know what, because it's very hard to just give an opinion or speculate on it, but something went wrong from the beginning.
One of the police officers that was forefront in the investigation early on was Gerald Dompig. We now know that he's left the police service. What's he doing now, Jossie?
You know, he has a company that offers security services to the government buildings, hotels, private businesses. In other words, he's in the security business, which is more or less a parallel profession to his police work that he had when he was in the police corps. But that's his actual job now. Offering this kind of service of protection to buildings and other areas that belong to the government or private business in Aruba.
Do you think that Gerald Dompig will ever come forward? Because I'm sure that he knows and can say a lot more about this case, or will he remain silent now?
I think that at one point or another he's going to have to come out and say so, because I remember that he was interviewed on U.S. cable news networks, in which he definitely stated, as he did in a private conversation with me here in my office, that these guys are guilty as hell, the three suspects. I mean, there's no way for him to take back that declaration, so he's got to stick to it. And he gave a lot of reasons why he thinks so. All the lies, all the fabrications, the cobwebs, everything that these three suspects created to get the attention away from them. But the attention has never been away from them. They're the only three suspects that I know that the police are working on.
With the two-year anniversary here now, again, and I want to clarify this with you one more time, Jossie, before I let you go, and I thank you for coming on the show with me again. Let's clear up and make very certain what this two-year anniversary means. Again, we're going to hear a lot of misinformation on cable news. I want you to set it straight for me.
Look, the two-year limit, the two-year time limit imposed by the law is valid only for suspects in cases of rape or murder or some serious felony charges that happen in Aruba or anywhere else. But in Aruba, the law is very specific in that. You can only hold them for 2 years as suspects unless you come up with new evidence that warrants the extension of this period, which is what happened lately. They have extended that period. There is no time limit involved, no maturation date, no maturing date for cases of rape or murder or cases where murder or rape are suspected to have been occasioned here.
And the suspects themselves are still suspects. That's been extended.
They are suspects and they remain as suspects for the time being, yes.
One last question, again, Jossie, before I let you go. The search at the Vandersloot residence, we may know sometime what it resulted in. Nothing has been released yet, but there have been a lot of questions about why some of the concrete wasn't dug up. Can you comment on that?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, we've asked the question for ourselves also. People talk about some kind of a cement walkway that was poured a few days or a week or something to that effect after Natalie disappeared. In other words, puddles on the floor have that fresh cement poured over in some walkways around the pool. That was not disturbed. And the reason, I don't know. We would have to ask the Dutch people if we ever see them.
Well, yeah, that's for sure. Well, again, thank you, Jossie. Appreciate you coming on the program.
You're quite welcome.
You're always welcome. Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be right back here on the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio.
How you doing out there? You ever seen to have one of those days where it just seems like everybody's getting on your case, from your teacher all the way down to your best girlfriend? Well, you know, I used to have them just about all the time, but I found a way to get out of it. Let me tell you about it.
Okay, we're back. It's been 2 years since the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. You just heard my discussion with Jossie Mansour about what's happening in Aruba. Now I thought I'd bring on Dave and Robin Holloway to talk about what's happening with their family. Hi, guys.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hey, Dana.
Been 2 years, 2 days, 2 months, 2 years. It's just been too darn long. How are you keeping up, Dave?
Well, we're doing okay. I mean, you know, it's... Like you said, it's been 2 years, and hopefully we'll know something in the coming months. So the Dutch have been on the investigation for the last 7 months or so, and, you know, they came in and did a search of the Vandershoek property, which beforehand that property was limited to just the room of Yaren back when the investigation first started. So it tells me that maybe they got some new information to warrant the search of the entire property, and then they went over to the Calpo residence and did an inspection of that property. So it tells me that they're still involved in the case, and I think they want to settle it, and I think Aruba needs for it to be settled or resolved.
Absolutely. One of the things that I find encouraging somewhat, but it must drive you as a family somewhat crazy, is how quiet they've been. And I think a police service or an investigative team are more professional when they keep things close to the vest, so to speak, or under their hat, because they don't want a whole bunch of rumors and innuendo going around. However, I do think that they should try and be in contact with you somewhat. Robin, how is this affecting you and your family? You're one that we don't hear from much in the media, but you've got a regular, everyday family thing going on here and all of this. Are you coping okay?
Well, we're doing the best we can. I think back to, you know, when she was missing, it was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe she's been gone 2 days, 7 days, 9 days, and now it's 2 years, and we cannot believe it. But, you know, Caitlin, our youngest daughter, she was 2, now she's 4, Brooke was 7, now she's 9, and yeah, we're doing everything we can to keep our faith up, and hopefully one day we'll find out what happened to her, but...
Faith is a huge part of this, Dave, and I'm sure you've had more disappointments than you've had encouragement. It seems like just when something looks a little bit positive for you, you get slapped down. How difficult is that for you?
Well, you know, it's, we've been through a lot of these ups and downs, roller coaster rides, if you want to call it that. You know, in the very beginning, you had, you know, we found blood in the car, then we didn't find blood, and then we had a confession, then we didn't have a confession, and, you know, from the barrel to the bloody mattress, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on. And then we had this lull the past 6 months, and then all of a sudden, you know, we get a call that they're searching that property, and it gives you, you know, I guess a for a better word, high expectations that, hey, something's going to happen. And, you know, you prepare for the best, but you also prepare for the worst. And, you know, and then now we're in a holding pattern. Nothing's happened in the last, I'd say, what, 3 weeks?
I had Jossie Manser on just before you, Dave, and he's saying the same thing, that the Dutch have been very quiet. However, they're still around, and he doesn't think that they're done yet. This is something that, you know, obviously you're not going to come forward with everything. That's the right way to do it. But we have heard the Texas EquiSearch is coming back in June to do a water search. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I went to the fundraiser back weekend before last, and Tim announced at that meeting that he's going back to Aruba. It's been in the planning stages for some time, but he just now, you know, made it public, and, you know, we're going to continue working with Tim to see that, you know, that happens, and hopefully we'll have some success.
Robin, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the support that you've received from the internet community, the friends on the blogs, those that send you best wishes, because, you know, we all do hope to have some sort of answers for you someday, and you can bring Natalie home where she belongs. Can you comment on that a little bit, please?
Okay. Well, I mean, when Dave first went to Aruba, I was looking, yeah, there were, it's amazing all the websites that we were able to find, just, I mean, in support of Natalie, and just blogs for Natalie, Scared Monkeys, and, you know, just, there's a website, Bring Natalie Home. It's just amazing the people that are still hanging in there 2 years later. Just, you know, they just want Natalie home, and it's just amazing the support there still is out there for Natalie. And just without that, I don't know where we would be. I mean, it's just amazing how many people still care about her, and all they want is for Natalie to come home.
There's a huge support mechanism out there with these, with the internet folks. You know them, and I know them, and I do too find it amazing, Robin, that here we are 2 years later, they're as strong as ever. Dave, it must be difficult for you, and I know I've asked you this question before, around the birthdays and the holidays and all that sort of stuff, the day-to-day life. If you were to sit down and talk with a parent whose child has been missing for a day or two or a week or two, and they're just in that beginning stages, and I know with the Natalie Holloway Foundation, I'm going to ask you a couple questions about that in a minute. What kind of advice would you give them?
Well, first of all, you know, the family's going to be in a situation like we were, just utter panic, and, you know, you just have to keep your faith, surround yourself with your family. Robin's been very supportive, and all of the other family members have been very supportive. Along with that, our community has showed a strong support, and just people all over the internet. You know, I just had a call just a few minutes ago from someone I met on the internet. He was just he attended his daughter's high school graduation. He just out of the blue called me and just wanted to wish me well. I know it's been 2 years, and just thinking about me. And you know, that believe it or not, that means a lot. And you know, just the untold number of people who you know, call and provide the support. And you have to have the support group. If you don't have that, you're lost.
Unfortunately, there's been a lot of misinformation regarding this two-year mark that's been broadcast on some of the cable news shows. I'm not sure why they're so mixed up. Again, one of the reasons why I brought Jossie on before you, to make it perfectly clear. Vandersloot and the Kelpel brothers are still suspects. They have not been removed as suspects. Is that what you've heard?
That's correct. They are still considered suspects, and they are still in an ongoing investigation. I had an attorney on the island kind of clear it up. Once they've been named as a suspect, you know, the police have to continue the investigation. They had a court case a number of years back that said, you know, basically the investigation should be completed by 2 years, but you know, if you're into it like they are, that two-year limit would not apply.
And there is no statute of limitations as far as a homicide goes?
As far as a homicide goes, no. I did some research along with the attorney on the island early on, and they had indicated that they had a case that went forward after 14 years. So homicide cases would not have anything to. Now, if these suspects were released, they would have to develop more information in order to proceed on with charges, from what I understand.
Robin, it's got to be difficult, especially with the young children, to sit down and talk with them about Natalie. Without me getting too personal, how do you do that? I'm sure you have the pictures and, of course, with the television coverage and everything that goes on in the news media. How do you talk to the young ones about Natalie?
Oh, it's hard as on Brooke. I mean, you know, Natalie was, she just adored Natalie, and, you know, she just missed her sister, and, you know, Caitlin was only two, so, I mean, you know, to look at pictures and, you know, there's Sissy or there's Natalie, and, but how do you explain that? I don't know. I mean, I'm still struggling with that, but you know, they miss Natalie so bad, and we've got to find out what happened to her.
Absolutely. Dave, just before I let you guys go, of course, there's still a reward offered for information on Natalie's disappearance.
Yes, there is. There's a $250,000 reward for the person who comes forward with information that will solve the case or find Natalie. Of course, the $1 million reward is still out there, but that's for her safe return. And, you know, that's probably based on the information we've seen. Probably not going to come about. So, you know, the FBI told us early on in the investigation, and, you know, and it's been difficult for us to accept it, but finally you come to a conclusion after reviewing the case file and everything that, you know, we're looking at a homicide case.
Well, I know that everyone in my listening audience, and even those that don't around the world, hope that you'll get the answers that you truly deserve. And I want to thank you both for joining me this evening. And, of course, we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Dana.
Thanks, Dana.
Thanks, Robin. Okay, bye-bye. All right, we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Well, all my friends are bopping the blues. It must be going round. All my friends are bopping the blues. And it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the doctor told me, boy, you don't need no pill. Yeah, that doctor told me, son, you don't need no pill. Just a handful. Jukebox to cure your ill. Well, my friends are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. All them cats are bopping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, but I must be rhythm bound. Well, the cat will bit me, man, I don't feel no pain. Blues, it must be going round. All my friends are popping the blues, and it must be going round. I love you, baby, I must be rhythm bound.
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. Special thanks to Dave and Robin Holloway, Jossie Mansour, Jackie Hollander for stopping around this evening. Tim Miller will be up here in just a minute or two. And as we are waiting for Tim, I want to talk a little bit about this two-year anniversary. I'm not sure what's going on cable news tonight. I haven't, or maybe tomorrow night will be the night that has more coverage. I'm obviously not able to watch when I'm doing this, but there's one piece of a program Greta Van Susteren did last year and then repeated again this year. And a part of it really bugs me. I don't know what you think. But this whole Aruban special that she did, there's a little line at the end of her presser for it. It says, everyone has seen bits and pieces of the story. When you put them all together, they form a picture of what might have been the perfect crime. What might have been the perfect crime. I think that's totally irresponsible for the people at Fox News and Greta Van Susteren's show to use that term, what might have been the perfect crime. I consider that comment to be an insult to the victim, the victim's families, and all of those that are still waiting to get answers. It almost seems like Greta Van Susteren and her people have come to their conclusion. And when you say something's a perfect crime, look up perfect as a definition in the dictionary. Should a crime be perfect? When a young girl is missing and has been missing for 2 years and is probably dead, and three suspects are still walking the streets or the beaches of Aruba or wherever the hell they are, I don't care. Is that the perfect crime? That really bothers me. To see that term, the perfect crime, I think it's irresponsible to use that. I think it's just a catch to try and draw viewers to the program. What do you think? We take calls for about 5 minutes here before we bring Tim Miller on. 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. What do you think now at the 2-year mark of the disappearance of Natalie Hollywood? What I tried to do tonight is try and answer some of those questions that aren't being answered on cable news. Try and give you the straight scoop or straight poop, so to speak, because there is a lot of misinformation. But I'll tell you, every time I see that, and I'm looking at it here again, this crime scene special that Greta Van Susteren did, everyone has seen bits and pieces of the story. Okay, I agree with that. When you put them all together, they form a picture of what might have been the perfect crime. I think what I would say is everyone has seen bits and pieces of the story, and when you put them all together, they show an investigation that lacked credibility. They show cover-up. They show collusion. They show lies, lies, and more lies. And they show a group of people in the news media, pundits, so to speak, that don't know anything more than a catchphrase to try and draw people to their program. This perfect crime comment, if I wasn't on the air, I would have more comments about that. I think is wrong. What do you think? 306-842-7884. We're going to have Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch on here in just a few minutes to talk about what's going on with Texas EquiSearch and the search for Natalie Holloway in June and the deep water search. And I'm going to ask him how the fundraiser for their organization went. But I do want to focus a little bit on his thoughts on the 2-year anniversary of the disappearance of Natalie Holloway and what's next for Texas EquiSearch in Aruba. But I just can't, yes, there's more to this. It says the missed opportunities, false leads, and outright lies that have plagued this investigation from the beginning are revealed in a 1-hour crime scene special. Okay, that's fine. I agree with that. Okay, but You just can't use terms like the perfect crime. Maybe I've been in law enforcement doing these types of shows too long. I just can't cotton to that. I think it's just plain and simple wrong. There's no perfect crime when a victim is missing, when the family doesn't have answers, when there's been so many lies and so many mistruths and so much corruption and incompetence. That's not a perfect crime. Hi, you're on the air. Hello?
Dana, it's Red. I could not resist.
This perfect crime thing is just bugging me. And I got to watch it because I might start throwing out some expletives here. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
we may have to put the 7-second delay on the host.
Oh, boy, but a 24-second delay on the host.
I think everybody on the blogs, Scared Monkeys, you name it, have been disappointed in Greta for quite some time, ever since she did the softball BS interview with Joran van der Sloot. And the whole point of it was not to do anything but basically kowtow and have a criminal do an interview with them. And the only way that they could ever get the interview was to basically throw up softballs, don't do obvious follow-up questions. I mean, Greta is supposed to be a lawyer. Personally, the stuff she's done lately, actually for quite some time, I've just been disillusioned by. I wouldn't mind if Fox gave her walking papers and she can go back to CNN and have a good time, because like she was more comfortable then.
Well, her show has gone away from the high-profile type case show, which there's plenty of information out there, to interviewing Ozzy Osbourne and all this kind of nonsense. But it's just this hook. And I understand that programming all has to do with ratings and viewership and all that. And people see this hook, this the perfect crime. Ooh, we'll have to watch that. How many viewers on the blogs and on the internet saw that this special was being advertised, thought that there would be something new, thought it might be a new special, when all it was just a replay because Greta is wherever and there was really no new information? Am I wrong? Am I being too hard on her?
I mean, I don't think so, Dana. I mean, it's been that way pretty much for quite some time. And whether it's Greta or whether it's some of the other mainstream media types that cover the story, but you know, they don't do anything. And I mean, and this is we've talked at great length about this, and I make it a point all the time to try to put this point forward to people, whether it's on our main page or whether we talk in the forum. And I don't mean to sound pompous about this, arrogant about this, or toot our own horn, but we actually have more insight and more research and more capability and more connection, interviews, information, you name it, than these people do in the mainstream media. They do not do their homework. They do zero research. The producers should be ashamed of themselves. The hosts are just reading a teleprompter. They don't know. The pundits are, which upsets me probably as much as this little hook upset you, is I find it so disrespectful and disgusting when these people start joking about the situation.
Yeah.
Like it's, I mean, we're not talking about Paris Hilton with a DUI or Lindsay Lohan. Who cares? We're talking about missing people. We're talking about people most likely who have passed away, and these guys are yucking it up on whether Ed Greta's show does it more than anybody when they talk about this case. And I just find it absolutely just disgusting that these guys think it's okay to laugh about it.
They're not funny. They're high-priced muckety-muck lawyers who are getting comped by Fox News to come on this dopey show and spew their misinformation, I'm sorry to say it, and it's just gone downhill from that. But once I saw that perfect crime, that was the only other thing that made me as angry was when her and a couple of those dopey lawyers said that they would go to Aruba and solve the crime, and they were all laughing about it. And there's just nothing funny about any of this.
Funny thing about that, Dana, ever since they made that comment, I haven't seen them in Aruba, have you?
No. There was a rumor that she was down there. I was going to ask Jossie about that, and I thought, I want him on the air to talk more about setting the facts straight instead of all this misinformation that you hear on the cable news shows, because it's just driving me around the bend.
I mean, honestly, and this is the reason why blogs and the internet and websites, whether they be true crime, whether they be missing persons, whether they be political, you name it. It's the reason why they've taken a foothold and why the newspapers are scared out of their minds, why the magazine circulations are down, why every news network claims to have a blog on their site when they so hated the internet when it first came out. They treated us all like garbage. They, this, you know, everything was, we don't do anything, we don't do research, we don't, we just give opinions. And the funny part about it is, my, how the things have changed an awful lot, where all you hear is opinion these days on the 24/7 shows. They do no research whatsoever. I mean, I would give anything for any of these shows. I mean, Bill O'Reilly does it from time to time.
Right.
I'll give him credit for that. But these guys do not know what investigative journalism is. They throw a bunch of people on a show in order to argue with each other or have a host talk over the other, the people who we all want to hear, and or when they finally do put a guest on to just do an interview, they ask the same five Dobie questions. And it's absolutely unreal. I mean, you're going to have Tim on later.
Yep.
We're going to be doing some interviews with him in the week and with some other people. But you think any of these shows would actually talk about a deep water search? You think they would get into it at all instead of just asking how the family feels? How do we think the family feels after 2 years? I mean, it's the most stupid question ever put out there to have to ask Dave or Robin or Beth, how do they feel? Gee. I mean, after 2 years of this nightmare, I mean, they feel just as bad as they did day one. And for the media to somehow think that that's an interview, it's a shame.
I'm going to let you go, sir. Tim Miller will be on next. Appreciate your call.
Thank you so much, Dana. You take care.
Okay, bye-bye. That's the Chief Monkey, the Head Banana Red from Scared Monkeys. We'll be right back with Tim Miller. From Texas EquiSearch, you're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio, channel 46 on Trust Cable in Alabama, on satellite virtual channel W3957, or wherever else you can pick us up. If you're listening on the podcast, great to have you. We'll be right back.
No, wait just a second, man. I'm about to lose my... Anyway, my scarf's too short, my belt's falling off. Losing my mind, you know. If I could be you, if you could be me, for just 1 hour, if we could find a way to get inside each other's mind, oh, if you could see you through my eyes instead of your ego, I believe it'd be a surprise to see that you've been blind. Oh, walk a mile in my shoes. Hey! Is it walk a mile in my shoes? Yeah, before you abuse, criticize, and accuse, is it walk a mile?
Okay, we're back. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer, and just by coincidence, we call this the Dana Pretzer Show. Again, 2 years ago, Natalie Holloway disappeared on the island of Aruba. One of the people who was very much involved, him and his team of searchers in this case, was Tim Miller in Texas Equisearch. Tim joins me now. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Dana.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back on.
Last time I talked to you, you were just in the midst of your fundraiser. How did that go?
Fundraiser went well. We raised, I think, like $62,000, which was a big shot in the arm, and I guess everybody knows that because we've just been swamped with missing person calls since then. So,
wow.
You know, it's one of the things that never stops. In fact, we're up in Grapeland, Texas, on a 54-year-old man up there that we're fearing the worst has happened to. And we've got people up there, and I believe he's on our website by now, Harold Sissom. And then we just got called 45 minutes ago on a 15-year-old boy that was swimming with some of his friends down here, and the creek was on. We're one of the fortunate ones that's had, you know, a fair amount of rain compared to the rest of the country, but bad news, the creek went up, and his friends were swimming, and 6 hours ago he went under, so... We're on the way now to go get our sonar equipment and stuff and see if we can locate a little 15-year-old boy.
Wow. You know, it's sad, and it never seems to end, as you say. 2 years ago, Natalie Holloway disappeared. Your thoughts, sir?
Oh, my God. You know, that's a case that we work. I mean, we work all of them hard, but when you're that far away from home, you know, in a foreign country where you're not getting any cooperation, it made it far more difficult. I again still believe from the bottom of my heart that during Van der Sloot, Kelful Brothers had something to do with her disappearance. I think some of the craziest statements ever made by anybody was that Manley was sold to the sex trade business. This has murder written all over it. And I truly believe still that Manley's out in the sea. I believe they put her in that big fish trap. Put rocks in there. That's information we got from Detective Dante over there. You know, after we did ground searches and everything. And Dante, what I understand, Dante's not with law enforcement anymore. But anyhow, we're putting together that search that we're hoping, and it looks like we're going to be back down in Aruba within a month doing that deep water search. To see if we can get her located. And, you know, the good news is she's that deep. I mean, the water's cold. There's no oxygen. There's no UV rays. Be kind of halfway similar to being in a refrigerator where she'd be decomposed. It certainly will. Probably no skin on her, but her, you know, her bones are going to be in that crab trap. And, you know, it's another shot in the dark, but I believe the equipment that we're taking with us is capable of finding any metal objects under there. And then we'll send an ROV down and we can see firsthand what it is and bring it up. I know we're going to get a lot of false images and a lot of different things out there, but and we're hoping to find out that one thing that could possibly be Natalie and somehow or another bring this to a close and let everybody get their lives put back together.
Yeah, exactly. Once you get there, Tim, maybe this is a little unfair for me to ask, how long do you think it will take? You know, I guess I'm asking you to predict a little bit.
Right now what we've got, you know, kind of budgeted in, if you can call it budgeting in, is 14 days. I think so that we'll be working, you know, two shifts during the day, two shifts, 8 to 9 hours. We can certainly work in the dark. In fact, the time is a lot better. If you clean on the sonar, a lot better at dark than the day. So, you know, we've got a lot of ground to cover, I think, within that amount of time. And, you know, I think a lot of people start to get on news and all of it. Florida State is pretty friendly, underwater, fun. And, you know, we did everything with their equipment off the stuff down that island. That's all the good our equipment was good for at that time. So, you know, now we've got some other resources that are going to help us on this and go down to that 1,000.
Could I get you to speak up just a little bit, Tim? Your signal's fading on me a little bit.
Okay, and but anyhow, now we've got the equipment that's capable of going to that 1,000 feet, and let's just go ahead and eliminate that water out there. And if we come up with something, if Natalie, you know, it'd be wonderful. If we walk away from there empty-handed again this time, I'm sure it'll be the last time we'll be, you know, in Aruba, but at least we can rest. Knowing that she's not out there. So, you know, it's one of the things I've been wanting to do and trying to put it together, which is a huge task. And, you know, it's coming together, and I'm very optimistic that we'll be there within a month.
Well, it's good news. Some may ask, once the water search is done, the deep water search is done, whether it brings results or not. Obviously, if it brings results, then you've succeeded in why you went. If it doesn't, would you be planning any ground searches there?
No, I think our ground searches are over with. I think they're over with. I think if anything happened to Natalie and she was in the ground, that our chances of finding her in the ground. I mean, we searched so much stuff in the ground. We took ground penetration units over there. We took methane gas detectors over there. We searched. And at one time, I think if you recall, we found what appeared to be a grave that had been dug up. And, we searched every bit of that island we could possibly search, of course, except Paul Vanderson's backyard, which we wanted to search back then, but he got kind of ugly with us and wouldn't let us do this. And I don't know what's developed or any evidence or anything out of the recent research that's been done back there. I know that she's not pretty hush-hush, but again, I think that, and we noticed some things over there. When we was in the water, Dana, that's when it appeared as though, you know, some people on the island got more nervous. I remember that Vanderstraaten was the police commissioner at that time when we found that barrel over on the other side and brought it up as, you know, Natalie wasn't in it, but that was the only time law enforcement, and they came out to numbers at that time, and several times when we was in the water, out in front of fishermen, but that's when I was fancy. Not one time when we were on land, so, you know, we're kind of looking at that too. We look back to the story, And Dave Holloway noticed that also. Natalie Stad noticed that too, that they'd get nervous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go make them nervous again and bring Natalie home.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares if they get nervous or not? Listen, Tim, it's always a pleasure having you on the program. Good luck. You need anything, certainly let me know.
I'll do it, Dana. Thank you, and thank all the listeners for their support. Keep up with our website and pray for these families that were out there looking for their loved ones.
You betcha. You're doing great work. Thanks, Tim.
Right.
Bye-bye. That's Tim Miller from Texas Equisurge's Cell Was Fading terribly there, but hopefully you got the gist of what he was saying. My name is Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back. Alrighty, that's it. I want to thank my guests this evening, Jackie Hollander, Dave and Robin Holloway, Jossie Manzer, Tim Miller from Texas Equisurge, and Red from Scared Monkeys. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. If you missed part of it, it can be found on the podcast or replay, whatever you want to call it, at www.scaredmonkeys.com/radio. That's scaredmonkeys.com/radio. Give the site administrator a little bit of time to get it up there, but it will be available for you soon. Also, make sure and check out that webpage daily for my daily commentary. And they've been making some of those daily commentaries into YouTube slideshows, which are a lot of fun, too. Of course, the creme de la creme of blogs is scaredmonkeys.com. And don't forget, if you want more information about Natalie Holloway, you can go to blogsfornatalie.com. There's all sorts of places out there. You guys are all doing great work. My name's Dana Pretzer. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again real soon.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.